Well, welcome back to HealthLink On Air, brought to you each week by SUNY Upstate Medical University, making the academic difference in healthcare in the Central New York community. And this is Tricia Torrey, every patient's advocate. We've been chatting with Jane Brody. Her name may be familiar to those of you who have read her many books over the years, or her byline, of course, in the New York Times. Jane, I love the title of your book. I'm going to give it again. Jane Brody's Guide to the Great Beyond, a practical primer to help you and your loved ones prepare medically, legally, and emotionally for the end of life. Just before we took the break, we were going to talk about spirituality. And you said your book really isn't about spirituality, but there is a section in there.
There absolutely is, because spiritual care is extremely important. And not everybody has a religion. It's different from religion. People who have a religion and consult their minister or priest, they get that kind of spiritual care from the clergy. But the rest of us who may not have that kind of affiliation, spiritual care can help everyone, even diehard atheists. It helps people who are dying feel whole, valued, fulfilled, and in harmony with the world and the people in it. And it often even helps people cope better with pain. What's important? You have to ask that patient, what is important to you? What do you hope for? What are you afraid of? What are you worried about? What might comfort you? What do you feel is undone in your life? Are there conflicts in your family or with friends that you want to resolve before you die? These are spiritual issues. We are all existential human beings as well as physical human beings, and these issues must be taken care of.
Well, you know, over the years, there have been a number of things written about dying, and some of them relate to spirituality, but of course, there's Elizabeth Kubler-Ross mm-hmm. and the stages of dying, and is that the kind of thing you're talking about?
No, not at all. As a matter of fact, my book says there is no such thing as one kind of good death. And that many people will not die in acceptance. They will die raging against the dying of the light. Mm-hmm. And that's perfectly okay if that's the way they choose to go. It's wrong for families to try to convince the dying person that they have to be at peace when they die, if that's not their personality and it's not their desire. It does help resolve issues if you are at peace when you die, but it's not essential.
It's not essential. It makes me think that there are a couple of things that I actually would look at the end of dying or as I was ready to die. I think I would be a little fearful. And spirituality can address that, can't it?
Absolutely. And you can ease the person's way out by simply telling that person, I love you, I will miss you, but I will be all right. And I will have memories of all that we have had together to sustain me after you're gone.
And the other thing that I think that I would be looking at would be, do I regret anything? And maybe not regret anything I did, because over time I've been able to forgive myself over those kinds of things. But more about, was there anything I left undone?
Well, undone, what people often leave undone is disagreements with family members that they've become detached and separated. And sometimes all it takes is a phone call to bring that to closure.
One of the next tenets you have in your book, one of the next roadmaps that I liked, was knowing when it's time to hold hands. Now, it struck me this is really more for the loved one of mm-hmm. someone who's about to die. Mm-hmm. Knowing the times to hold hands rather than to provide those things that will just keep them alive. And this is really personal experience for you, isn't it?
Well, it's very interesting because so often people think, oh, this person is weak and doesn't have any energy, and what we need to do is give them more food. And when your person is dying, they cannot digest food. And in fact, you mentioned a personal experience. The daughter of one of my college roommates died, unfortunately, of cancer at age 31. And her father insisted on giving her some applesauce as she was near death. Well, the poor girl choked and died right there on the spot.
From applesauce.
From applesauce, because she couldn't swallow.
So this is really...
It's wrong. You're right. You say, hold hands, be a comfort, you know, say, I'm here for you, I love you, kiss the person, but don't try to put oxygen masks on, intravenous, this, that, and the other thing, because the person can't handle it at close to death.
Well, what I find just as interesting is that a lot of what you've incorporated into your book has to do with almost mechanical or medical kinds of things and perhaps research this, but not just, say, your opinion over how these things should happen or even what other scholars have written about it. This is really information that we can document.
Yes, I do use the literature, the medical literature. And it's interesting because more and more now, the literature that doctors get contains information about perspectives at the end of life. The Journal of the American Medical Association has been running a long series every month on perspectives at the end of life. The American Journal of Nursing has had a series of articles on how to manage patients and families at the end of life. So this subject is here and now. Mm-hmm. It is really important. And just because we're living longer doesn't mean we're going to live forever.
No, that's true. That's true. And of course, there are so many of us baby boomers who are getting to that age. Mm-hmm. We're dealing with it with our parents or even with ourselves.
Absolutely. There's a sandwich generation that has to deal with both their own children and their parents. And convincing, for instance, convincing an elderly parent to do that living will, to assign a healthcare proxy, to think about how they want their bodies disposed of, to think about the memorial service they want. I told my husband the other day, I want my memorial service when I'm still alive.
Uh-huh.
I want to know, I want to be there to hear what people say about me, good and bad, and I want to laugh and cry with them.
It reminds me of the Mark Twain quote about reports of my demise have been greatly exaggerated.
Yes.
Well, now there's a lot more here too, and one of the things I know is that you're showing people how to talk to their doctors about the end of life, and it makes me think, I just read recently that there's a relatively new board certification for hospice and palliative care doctors. So this really is a recognition, like you're saying, in the journals and in the literature, and now doctors focusing on this. How do we talk to doctors at the end of life?
Well, you say, as I said earlier, that I know that you've tried very hard to keep me going, and you've done your best, and I greatly appreciate what you've done for me. But now when the end is approaching, I expect you, I want you to be here for me until I take my last breath.
And asking them that also includes things like, I need you to help me manage my pain.
Oh, absolutely.
I don't need you to be feeding me when I... Right. So it all ties together, doesn't it? These may be step by step. They may be a roadmap, but they really do all tie together. Tell me, out of all of your book, what do you think is the one unique piece of advice that you would want to make sure that we talk about this morning that I haven't covered yet?
Well, autopsy.
Aha!
You know, autopsy is extremely important, and it is a dying breed.
Oh, so to speak.
Yes. Very few people have an autopsy done after they die, and yet when you go to a new doctor, you fill out a form that asks about your family history, your family's medical history, what your parents died of, maybe aunts and uncles and sisters and brothers, and at what age. And often people haven't a clue, or they just think they know what the person died of, but that wasn't really the cause of death because an autopsy was never done.
Interesting. So it isn't just that you're dying of old age. You really do want to look into why someone died?
Because it influences your genetic history. It can help you live better. It can help you determine how to raise your children and what kinds of care they should be getting. I'll give you a classic example. David Bloom, who was a journalist for CNN,
yes,
died in Iraq, not of a gunshot wound, not of a bomb, but of a clot,
yes,
a pulmonary embolism. And the autopsy done on this young man showed that what contributed to his death was a genetic defect called factor V Leiden.
Really?
That his three daughters might have inherited. And if they are tested and found to contain the same genetic defect, they can take measures that would help prevent them from having a similar kind of circumstance, premature clot forming and killing them.
You know, what you don't know is that about 2 weeks ago, we actually had this conversation about personalized medicine in recognition of Charles Darwin's birthday. And you're absolutely right. Yet to this point, it probably wasn't as important as it is now to know why somebody died, because now we can actually do something with that tool.
That's absolutely true.
So we should be insisting on those autopsies. Anything else we've missed?
We haven't talked about caregiving and how important that is. Families do most of the caregiving for people near the end of life.
Yes, they do.
And they really need guidance on how to do it properly, how to get assistance when they need assistance, how to take care of themselves so they don't burn out.
And that's a huge issue, isn't it, with caregivers?
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, Jane Brody, your book is, and I love this again, Jane Brody's Guide to the Great Beyond, a practical primer to help you and your loved ones prepare medically, legally, and emotionally for the end of life. We so much appreciate your coming by this morning. I have a feeling that there will be a run on your book here in Central New York this afternoon, or maybe at Amazon.com, and people can pick them up in any of those locations, can't they?
Absolutely, and also BarnesandNoble.com.
There you go. Thank you so much for coming by this morning.
Thank you.
Listeners, we'll be back after a quick break. Please stay with us. This is SUNY Upstate Medical University's HealthLink on Air on 570 WSYR.